Thanks for joining us. Tonight, the courtroom drama unfolding in Minneapolis with the police chief joining the list of witnesses testifying against Derek Chauvin, who's accused of killing George Floyd. But there's a long legacy of officers charged with excessive force, falling short of convictions. Now one family with a painful look at what justice might look like.
Once Mr. Floyd had stopped resisting, and certainly once he was in distress and trying to verbalize that, that should have stopped.
A compelling condemnation of Derek Chauvin from none other than his former boss, Minneapolis Police Chief Madera Arredondo, as his trial for the death of George Floyd entered its second week. The chief acknowledging neck restraints were permitted at the time, but saying Chauvin did not use reasonable force in keeping his knee on George Floyd's neck for over 9 minutes.
That in no way, shape, or form is anything that is by policy, is not part of our training, and it is certainly not part of our ethics or our values.
Arredondo fired Chauvin in the wake of Floyd's death, and he knelt as Floyd's hearse arrived at his funeral last summer. The chief's assessment of Chauvin's behavior reinforcing Friday's damaging testimony from Lieutenant Richard Zimmerman.
I do.
The most senior officer in the Minneapolis Police Department.
You know, your view of that use of force during that time period.
Totally unnecessary.
The most significant evidence has been from fellow police officers who have said, this was not reasonable force. This is not what our training tells you to do. That's very powerful testimony against Derek Chauvin.
Chauvin is charged with second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter, accused of killing 46-year-old Floyd during the police stop. From Chauvin's own body camera, you can hear his voice.
He's going to control this guy because he's a sizable guy.
Looks like
he's probably on something.
Chauvin's defense attorney showing Chief Arredondo pictures under cross-examination, questioning if Chauvin's knee was on Floyd's neck the entire time.
Would you agree that from the perspective of Officer King's body camera, it appears that Officer Chauvin's knee was more on Mr. Floyd's shoulder blade?
Yes.
But Chief Arredondo saying Floyd may have already been dead. He also noted that Chauvin did not follow the department's policies on de-escalation or providing first aid. Still, prosecutors are facing the uphill legal challenge of convicting a police officer who's accused of killing someone while on the job. Among officers charged in a fatal on-duty shooting, less than 50% have actually been convicted, and often for a lesser offense. Since 2005, only 7 officers have been convicted of murder.
As a legal matter, police officers are allowed to do things that civilians can't do. And so the question becomes, when do police officers cross that legal line?
Much of the prosecution's case rests on the video recording of Chauvin's behavior.
You can believe your eyes that it's a homicide, it's murder. You can believe your eyes.
The video is the heart of the prosecution's case. You can see what was happening and what the result would be.
The power of police violence caught on tape through police body cams and bystander cell phone video has galvanized the public ever since Rodney King was beaten by Los Angeles police in 1991. In the criminal trial, 4 officers were found not guilty of excessive force.
Not guilty of the crime of assault by force.
Sparking widespread protests and violence. A year later, 2 officers were sentenced to 30 months in prison in a federal civil rights trial. Randy Foster is a retired law enforcement officer who often testifies as an expert witness.
People thought that the videotaped beating of Rodney King would be a game changer, and yet it wasn't.
At that particular moment, it wasn't. But if you look at it, you fast forward to today, more civilians are taking their cell phone out to video police action. And police are responding to that, trying to stop people from videoing.
Is it harder to get a conviction against a police officer than, say, a regular citizen?
Yes. The public don't like to put their police behind bars. That's why video evidence is so important, because it kills the narrative of a lie. And I'm telling you this as a former law enforcement officer who investigated internal affairs. Yes, they will lie. They're just as human as me and you.
70-year-old Laquan McDonald was killed by Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke in 2014. Police first told his family he was shot only once, but the family said they knew that wasn't true.
I had a nephew that actually worked at the medical examiner's office. He was receiving his own cousin. So I get a phone call, "Unc, they lying. This boy got a whole lot of bullet holes in him."
In 2015, a year after Laquan's death, police released dash cam video showing Van Dyke getting out of his squad car, opening fire within 6 seconds, and shooting Laquan 16 times.
How could you watch a young black human being be shot 16 times and not have any compassion or empathy?
His great uncle, Reverend Marvin Hunter, remembers Laquan as a loving young man.
He enjoyed making sure that other people were happy, because he liked to keep people laughing. He kept things lighthearted.
Chicago, shut it down!
The family set out on a crusade for justice.
This is another Emmett Till moment, and we're going to have to do the heavy lifting to raise the question as to why black people cannot get justice in this country.
Charged with first-degree murder, Van Dyke's defense was that he feared for his life, firing his gun only after Laquan ignored repeated commands to drop a 3-inch knife during the incident.
I was yelling at him, "Drop the knife."
Prosecutors asking why, if Van Dyke felt threatened, he's seen walking toward Laquan.
I thought I was backpedaling that night.
You thought you were backpedaling as you're firing shot after shot after shot?
What I know now and what I thought at that time are two different things.
In a rare officer conviction, Van Dyke was found guilty in October 2018 of the lesser charge of second-degree murder and 16 counts of aggravated battery with a firearm. His jury, 8 women and 4 men, only 1 African-American. He was sentenced to 6 years and 9 months in prison, but that's far less than what Laquan's family had wanted.
I felt betrayed. I felt angry, because I knew that it was not enough.
Reverend Hunter delivered a powerful victim impact statement in court, a message to Van Dyke written in the voice of his nephew.
Why should this person, who has ended my life forever, be free when I'm dead forever?
Still, Reverend Hunter says his nephew's case helped set the stage for the trial of Derek Chauvin.
We did things that brought us to a place where, for the first time in recent history, a police officer in uniform was convicted for a crime in which he had committed. Behold how good and how pleasant it is.
Now, Reverend Hunter urging George Floyd's family to hold steadfast in their quest for justice, hoping the Floyd family can get what his almost did, a sentence that reflects the crime.
In the George Floyd case, the American justice system is on trial again, and she's fighting and searching for her soul. She came close with Laquan. She can win with Floyd.
And be sure to stay with ABC News Live for complete coverage of the trial. Coming up, meet America's most diverse Congress yet.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially 4 trials facing former President Trump as he makes his 3rd bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
The newest freshman class of Congress, younger and more diverse than ever before among both Democrats and Republicans, armed with distinct life experiences, determined to make Congress the people's branch. Here's ABC's Rachel Scott.
I would wrestle here, so it was a fixture in my childhood. I never thought 15 years later, right across the street, that I would open a headquarters for my first campaign.
Wasn't that long ago that Representative Torres was a poor kid from the Bronx.
Tell me how a kid from the Bronx gets to Congress.
I grew up in a public housing development right across the street from Trump Golf Course. The government was investing more than $100 million in a golf course for Donald Trump. What does it say about our society that we're willing to invest more in a golf course than in the homes of low-income Black and brown Americans? And so my experience in public housing is what inspired me. Eventually, I took the leap of faith and ran for public office.
Torres' story is distinctly a New York one. That tale of two cities playing out in his front yard. Now as a U.S. congressman representing the state's 15th district, he hopes to level the playing field.
Your congressional district that you represent right now, food insecurities, unemployment. How do you tackle all of this during your first term?
The South Bronx is the poorest congressional district in America. I'm optimistic about our ability to confront these challenges because a Democratic president and a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate represents to me a historic opportunity to govern as boldly in the 21st century as FDR did.
A historic opportunity for a groundbreaking congressman. Torres is the first openly gay Afro-Latino member of Congress, joining 10 LGBTQ members, the highest ever in a congressional class.
A wise person once said, if you don't have a seat at the table, then you're probably on the menu. And with elected officials like me, LGBTQ people of color finally have a seat at one of the most powerful tables, the United States Congress.
Joining Torres at that most powerful table are 124 people of color, 120 women, 30 of those Republicans, a record-breaking high for the party, making the 117th Congress the most diverse in history. At long last, a congressional class that is reflective of the nation it serves.
Hi, my name is Young Kim.
I'm Nancy Mace,
U.S. Representative Marilyn Strickland.
From an array of districts, backgrounds, and experiences, they are beginning their freshman terms in a year that has already been transformative on the issues of race and equality, and they are ready to take on Washington.
Now to the alarming increase in violence directed at people of Asian descent.
You see the horrible footage. You see elders being pushed down. You see people have died.
Since the beginning of COVID-19, we have increasingly seen Asian Americans becoming targets of hate across the nation.
Representatives Young Kim and Marilyn Strickland uniquely feel the weight of being first after a string of attacks against the Asian American community.
Believe me, when you're the first, you never want to be the last. And so you have a duty to ensure that you're trying to cultivate and help others come after you.
They, along with Representative Michelle Park Steele, are the first Korean American women to serve in Congress.
Asian Americans are not necessarily, you know, so glued to one party. If you know there is a fellow Asian American running for office, they tend to support them because they are excited about having the opportunity to have another Asian American represent them and their voice.
Both women have spoken out about the damage the anti-Asian rhetoric of the previous administration has had on their community.
It really gave people permission to normalize that type of speech and behavior.
When President Trump called coronavirus Kung Flu, that was a defining moment for me. I said, enough is enough.
Like so many Asian Americans, Congresswoman Young Kim from California's 39th district was shaped by her immigrant experience.
My mom would often tell me, this country has given us so many opportunities, and when you have the opportunity, let's do our part to give back.
Those lessons from her mother compelling Kim to take a life of public service.
I campaign on being a independent leader. Any legislation that I work on will have to have a bipartisan sponsorship.
And across the aisle, her Democratic colleague and fellow Korean American representative, Marilyn Strickland, is hoping for the same.
Education, job training, workforce development, I think that those are things that very often have bipartisan support. And so I think there's an opportunity to work together. I think the question is, do we have the will to do it?
Raised by a black father and a Korean mother, Strickland got her start in politics in Tacoma, Washington, where she served on the city council and then as mayor from 2008 to 2018. She now represents Washington's 10th district. One of the big items on her agenda, police reform.
Typically, policing is a very localized issue, but the federal government has a role to play because it doesn't matter what your zip code is, every person has a right to be safe in their neighborhood. It is not about being anti-police, it's about being pro-safety.
These new faces of Congress, just the latest in a long line of female trailblazers, like Representative Nancy Mace, who was the first female grad from the Citadel. She now leads her district with that same drive. But getting to this point meant overcoming enormous challenges.
I was raped when I was 16, and I dropped out of school shortly thereafter, right at my 17th birthday. I've had many challenges in my life, but I learned some very tough lessons during some very tough times, starting at a very young age.
What pushed you through in those moments?
It literally took me 25 years to be able to talk about it publicly, and the only reason I had is because we were debating a fetal heartbeat bill, and there were no exceptions for women who'd been raped or who are victims of incest. And I just had it. I was so pissed off and so angry and confronted one of my biggest fears in life, which made me stronger.
Propelled by her past, Mace is undeterred to take up positions not traditionally supported by Republicans, like prison reform and environmental issues.
My life has been a series of second chances. So as much success as I've had, I've also failed. And it's one of the reasons that I've been a big champion of criminal justice reform and prison reform.
This freshman class, on the job only a few months, are undeterred by the challenges they face, determined to bring real change to Washington.
That's the reason I got into politics, because I hate the BS, I hate the hypocrisy.
I came to Congress to help bridge the divide, to help break the gridlock that has been keeping our country from moving forward.
There are communities who, even before the pandemic, were still not being treated well, whether it's access to jobs, access to health care. I think that COVID has given them an urgency to try to address them.
There's so much that we have to do over the next 2 years.
And finally tonight, High on Hope.
I guess here we go.
Legendary songstress Mariah Carey behind those shades, rolling up her sleeve for her COVID-19 vaccine. And in true Mimi fashion, when the shot of hope's delivered, hitting that high note. The star, known for her multi-octave vocal range, belting out a note of gratitude.
Oh, it's only part one. It's only part one.
I'm ready.
Oh, God.
Okay.
And that is Nightline. You can watch all of our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here same time tomorrow. Thanks for staying up with us. Good night, America.